Hello everybody, this is Josh Placer from GameWisdom.com, where we examine the art and science of games. Welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. We got a great one tonight. Unfortunately, James had some work-related issues to deal with, so he couldn't make it. But we're going to have a very fascinating topic. Our main topic tonight is going to be talking about hype in the game industry. And as any of you who's been following game development over like the last few months, or even the last few years, you know how much hype you can live by the hype or die by it. And there's a very big example of that that has been going on probably for a few weeks by the time you listen to this cast. But let's welcome tonight's guest. He is the owner of Gotaki Gaming, a site that is specializing in variety of content relating to the game industry, whether it's writing, videos, etc. He actually reached out to me, and he's been kind enough to take some of my writings and posts and put them over there, and we're going to have a great chat tonight. So please welcome to the podcast, Nathan McGreal.
Wow, that was a fantastic introduction.
Thank you. I've been getting better at this as time goes on.
You've got this host thing nailed on. You really do.
That is from the talking for 3 years of doing this. And whatever you do, don't listen to like the first 4 months of my other podcast. Don't listen to those.
As soon as we're done with this one, that's where I'm going.
Oh, good. You can listen to Stage Fright, Josh, then.
You can actually hear him panic.
Yes, exactly. Nathan, it's a pleasure to have you on tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and I think we've got quite a substantial topic.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of meat on this bone, really, as you could say.
Yeah, and that's pretty much standard for these casts these days. Before this cast, I think everyone who listens knows that we try to establish like a time frame of saying, oh, this cast will be 30 minutes. This will be an hour-long conversation.
It will
never happen. That will never... If we ever come under par or under our estimate, something's gone horribly wrong with that cast.
Yeah, you just have to stop making podcasts then, you know, but... Mm-hmm. Any podcast I do, it's the segues. Mm-hmm. It can go on for hours.
Oh, dear God, yes. Yeah. The tangents on these casts have gotten legendary. There have been... The first year is pretty much the Dark Souls tangent cast. Like, every cast, there was a Dark Souls tangent about... It didn't matter what we were talking about. Dark Souls would come up at some point. And recently, we've seemed to have expanded. One time, it was Marvel versus DC... Another one was, somehow we started talking about the Leprechaun movies at one point. Like,
also, as an Irishman, if anyone's listening, you can probably tell that I've that exotic accent. The Leprechaun movies are very close to my heart, mainly because of the ridiculous accent.
Yeah.
And how true to life it is of actually living in Ireland with all the leprechauns and God, we're segueing again.
We haven't even started yet. That's good.
Oh, yes, the topic.
Yeah. Before we start talking more about hype, since this is your first time on the cast, Nathan, I always like to give our guests a brief period to talk a little bit about themselves and what they do. So for the folks listening, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself and what Gotaki Gaming is.
Well, as you kind of perfectly put in your introduction, I don't know if I can do it better than you. GotakiGaming.com, the site that I own. It's kind of a new website, but it's hopefully going to grow into a place where there's going to be informative discussion, articles, videos, and podcasts to do with the industry that you and I both love and a lot of people love. It's kind of a popular industry.
Oh yeah.
And I'm currently living in Switzerland as well, randomly enough. Managed to get the boat off Ireland. And yeah, I've been playing games since probably before I could walk or run. And I tend to love RPGs. I'm a big RPG guy. So the Skyrims, the JRPGs as well, of course, Final Fantasy, and also Metal Gear Solid. So if I kind of segue into a game, it's more than likely going to be Metal Gear Solid. So be warned. And yeah, that's really me. I'm a guy who loves games, and I have a website about games, and I've got some great people that are writing some very, very good pieces. And if anyone wants to, please check it out and see if there's anything you like.
Awesome. And we talked about this before the cast, but it's always great to meet people who are interested in trying to have an elevated discussion on game design in the industry. Yeah. Another topic that's easily like 5 hours, I bet, between the two of us would be sort of a problem there's been with trying to find quality pieces of writing. We mentioned this before off recording, but one of the things I think we both don't like is how recycled a lot of like the main sites are. You get the same story told the same way 5 times, essentially.
It's simplistic regurgitation of just, slight updates, and it's an entirely different article just to get the clicks, and it's very on the surface. It doesn't go into any in-depth kind of observation or kind of criticisms. It's just kind of there. And it's kind of just hollow text, really. I don't really know how to describe it, but I feel like the kind of art of a proper feature is kind of slowly being phased out in favor of kind of short, snappy articles or just news pieces. And I think it's a bit of a shame that there's not more content like the content that you make, where it's kind of, it's more analytical and more in-depth. And hopefully Kotaku Gaming could be a place where people who kind of like that kind of stuff, and your channel as well, as more people discover the great work you're doing, it that'll be a sanctuary of sorts for people who want more than just the kind of general news. They want to discuss about games kind of in an elevated level.
And I think another thing that we do very unique on Game Wisdom that we don't really see a lot is having discussions with game developers. That's one of the things that it sort of started out as like a side idea on the site, but it has really, I think, blossomed to one of the defining features is doing these podcasts and having developers literally all around the world at this point on to talk about developing games, working in the industry. And the fact that there is a challenge to it, and I think that's one of like, the bigger points. And again, this is another tangent. I think we have only been talking in terms of this recording for about, I would say, like 6-7 minutes at this point.
What's the topic again? I don't know.
But
why are we here?
But it's so easy to get on these tangents. And the thing is that it's easy because not a lot of places talk about them, and they're fascinating conversations. There is a lot of challenge and a lot of, I guess, quote-unquote mysticism about making a game that most consumers don't know about. And I think that also feeds into our main topic tonight when we talk about hype, if we ever get to it, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to try to masterfully steer this ship back to the topic. And you speaking of getting game developers to do interviews, wouldn't you love to get Sean Murray on the phone?
Oh, yes.
I would ask him, how are you, Sean?
How are you doing? Have you been drinking?
Are you okay? Are you okay, Sean? Because you've got that kind of gross depression beard going on. You've got that sad look in your eyes. Just pat him slowly on the back and say, you can talk to me, Sean.
Yes. I would love to talk to him. I may send him another message on Twitter when we're done here just to see if we can somehow get him on. I guess to continue talking about our main topic, obviously by now, if you're listening to this cast, No Man's Sky has pretty much dominated the conversation. We are recording this in about mid-August. This cast will most likely be posted in early September, and I'm pretty sure people will still be talking about No Man's Sky.
Most definitely.
And for those of you who somehow, in some strange miracle, have completely missed any conversation on it, first, congratulations. I think that is a feat.
It's admirable. To move yourself that far from society. It is.
And still be able to listen to this cast and still know about the cast, but don't know about No Man's Sky.
They operate in a very particular corner of the internet.
Yes. So, No Man's Sky developed by Hello Games. Sean Murray, I think he's not only the lead programmer, but he's also the lead game designer on it.
And a fellow Irishman.
Yes. And they've been working on this game for a very long time. Nathan, do you know how long it's actually been in development for? Because I've heard like little bits and pieces of it throughout the years, but I don't remember exactly when first news started bubbling up around it.
Well, I believe that it was unveiled 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I could be completely wrong. If I'm wrong, please let me know, anyone. I'm open to being proven wrong. And I believe that it's been in development for the guts of 6 years. That's what my memory is telling me. Could be entirely wrong, but also remember that they had that flood in the studios maybe 2 years ago, and they lost a lot of their work. So it's been a very long, drawn-out, difficult development on top of what we're going to be mainly discussing, on top of this gargantuan hype. I've never seen anything like it to follow a game. Never mind just a game, but an independent game.
Oh, yeah, that's a major point we'll have to talk a little bit more in depth about in a few minutes, too.
Yeah.
And as a interesting aside, I just looked up the game on Wikipedia. So they're saying that it sort of started around 2012 after their game Joe Danger 2, but it has been like a concept or something they've been wanting to do since.
He said that he was working on it on the side whilst working on Joe Danger. So yeah, obviously it wasn't in development for 6 years. I was wrong, 4 years then. But I think that the idea was in his head and it was something that they were discussing.
Yeah, and as another bit of thing, I'm looking at like the little picture of Sean Murray on there on the Wikipedia page when he was young and full of life and
back when
beardless,
he was with like the weight of the world on his shoulders. So I think the first question I would have to ask is, have you played it?
No, I have not. One, because I just haven't had the PC to run it yet, and I still need to at some point get my hands on either a PS4 or Xbox One. I have the Wii U at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for the right enough sale.
Yeah.
I think I would probably get the PS4, though, because I know that you can do a lot in terms of streaming. I would love to add more console games to, like, the stream and the video content.
Yeah, the PS4 makes it exceptionally easy to do that. Now, I have played No Man's Sky.
Okay. Before I ask you what your thoughts on Nathan, for people listening, again, that strange intersection or cross-section of people who know this site but haven't heard about the game, No Man's Sky is a open-ended survival game with the big twist or like the big bullet point being essentially a ground-to-space universe, procedurally generated, so that no two planets are the same. You are free to explore at your leisure. And essentially, you know, this wide place for everyone to go to.
It's a galaxy.
Yes.
Which is mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. And especially, and again, this is going to be a topic of itself in a few minutes, but especially for an independent developer.
Yeah.
But before we talk more about that, as someone who's played No Man's Sky, Nathan, what did you think of the game?
Okay, well, I'll start with when it was unveiled, okay? And it was kind of like the game that, you know, when you talk about with your friends, you know, years ago, it's like, wouldn't it be amazing if you could get in a ship and then land on a different planet? God, that would be amazing, but it's impossible. And like Mass Effect was like the first game where, you know, you landed on a planet but via loading screen, and it was like, God, it's so close to being that magical, like, kind of totally free roaming game. So I kind of had a little bit of an expectation that it might be something that it turned out that it wasn't. And I've played only 8 hours, so I haven't played so much. But let's just say that when I finally sat down to play it, it was very different than what I was expecting from the unveiling all those years ago.
Yeah.
First of all, the onus on mining and constantly having to juggle resources is something that I wasn't really aware of, and I was kind of following the game. And Sean Murray alluded to the fact that, you know, you'd need to collect resources, but I didn't think it would be, like, intrinsic to the whole experience. And like my major gripe with the game, even though like I'm quite early in it, I'm starting off on the negative points, so maybe that's just my Irish nature, but the fact that you have to delicately manage your inventory, you've such little space, ironically enough, in such a massive game, you've such a tiny space in your ship for resources. And when your game is centered around collecting resources, it's a strange decision, and it makes the game a lot more frustrating than I was expecting it to be, because when you start on this planet, it's stunning. Like, the art design and the style of the game, I love. Like, the color schemes, it's very rich and colorful. And when I eventually got my hyperdrive built and kind of first took off a planet, I was like, wow, this is something else. This is great. And then I landed another planet, and it's kind of rinse repeat, very repetitive. And I am a person that loves big kind of open games, but there isn't really a lot of substance to the game. I think technically it's a marvel, but I think I heard somebody say fast as an ocean, but deep as a puddle. And I hate to say it, because I wanted nothing more than the game to do well and for Sean Murray to be able to go, yeah, I'm proud of this. I'm sure he still is, of course, because of all the work he put into it, but there's just nothing really there. It's like this empty universe. And yeah, but I think kind of the initial flight out of the planet was like, I was just like a 5-year-old going, this is incredible. To actually be able to do this and fly in the ship. But then it's little things like not being able to look around the cockpit. So it's kind of this rigid camera view, this very restrictive view. So you don't really get the feeling that you're kind of able to move your head in the cockpit, if that makes sense. And if you get attacked by space pirates, you can't. It makes it very difficult to see where they're coming from, because you can only see in the direction that you're flying. And so overall, in short, I'll try to like not rant too much and contain myself, but in short, it's different than what I was expecting. There's some strange design choices, particularly with how small your inventory is at the start, and I know that that'll improve and you'll get more space, but it's the motivation to go and get the upgrades to get that space, because there's not really a whole lot going on. And yeah, I just feel like that the years of build-up, which, again, I haven't seen in my time, especially surrounding an independent game. I think it kind of, it was misconstrued the way it was marketed as well. And I don't want to point the finger, because on one hand, they've created this brilliant concept. Because I really do get the feeling that it's a conceptual game. That people will take in 5 or 10 years and build on. And I think it'll take 5 or 10 years before we get the game that people were expecting No Man's Sky to be. It may sound like a strange comparison, but I think it's quite like Grand Theft Auto 3. Now, Grand Theft Auto 3 just radically changed the industry. And there was loads of kind of copycats, you know, 3D open world games that kind of followed it. And then when you look at Grand Theft Auto 3, if you went back and play that today after Grand Theft Auto 5, it seems just very elementary and simplistic. And not very deep, but it was the concept behind it. It was still a great game for its time, but it was the concept that was so strong that was taken and built upon and built upon until you get to the level of Grand Theft Auto 5.
And we see this and not in just about any major genre of the industry in the last 20 plus years. The first game is always going to be that the foundation for what's to come. And I mean, we could easily talk about any big name game, Mario, Zelda, even like over like the last decade with stuff like Resident Evil. I mean, in my post I wrote about survival horror, like Resident Evil basically redefined the industry twice. First the original one in 1996. And I agree with you, Nathan, about how a lot of these games, it takes that time. The first game very rarely is going to be that dream, never, everything works yeah. kind of experience. It takes yeah. time and it takes a foundation to do that.
Exactly. And when you take into consideration that Hello Studios, or Hello Games, sorry, mm-hmm. That their only kind of previous work as a unit was Joe Danger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think you could get two more vastly different.
I know. I was reading that. I was like, wait a minute. They're the Joe Danger developers? They went from yeah. that to this?
Yeah. So, I mean, they took a substantial leap. And say, for example, Naughty Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're saying the one game in a series. I totally agree with you mm-hmm. that the first game never gets it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at The Last of Us,
mm-hmm.
people could say, but that was the first in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go, well, not particularly, because Naughty Dog had built up to that
mm-hmm.
through the Uncharted games.
Yeah.
And when you play Uncharted 4, it's like it feels almost like The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had time to build up this style and to build up the gameplay mechanics and kind of to build up to that. So even if they start a new series, they have their own kind of style established. But
and
then
they have the growth as well of the studio.
Exactly.
Speaking about Naughty Dog, as a bit of a fun fact, now we all know that they originally, their first big name game was the Crash Bandicoot series.
Yeah.
But I remember them even before that with this horrific fighting game called Way of the Warrior for like the 3DO. Oh. So it'd be like a Mortal Kombat ripoff.
Oh man, that is a blast from the past. That was an awful game.
Yeah, and I mean, we can say this about even like a lot of the top tier studios. Now, a lot of it could also be being first timers, and then there's some just like weird and wacky games that we can easily spend an hour listing off. But
yeah,
it just goes that there is a growth to game development. You can look at, again, we can track it with any studio.
Yeah.
And the independent scene has really, I think, been a little more fascinating. It's been a lot more transparent. And I think that's also sort of helped lead to this kind of, to this hype machine that we're seeing. It's no longer about just a studio. You can now find the person who's developing it. They can become like the face of the game, like Sean Murray did. And I think like he's like the
appearances,
mm-hmm.
interviews. He, as you said, he was just the face of the game.
Yeah. And you don't really see that in AAA development. It's always when you hear about games, it's the studio that does it. Very rarely will you see like a lead designer come out like, if or like a TV interview, or even like at like major press shows, it's usually like head of marketing, or it's yeah. something that's already been like prefabricated.
Exactly. I mean, the only auteur, I suppose you could call them, that I can think of would be Hideo Kojima.
Mm-hmm.
But even he kind of wouldn't go on television playing mm-hmm. the game a year before its release or anything. I was kind of just really strangely captivated by seeing Sean Murray on the Stephen Colbert show.
Yes.
This was, when was this, a year ago?
It has to be at least under a year, because I still remember like seeing that. I was like, wait, we have a game developer on a talk show?
Playing an independent game.
Something, those words don't go together. Something
it's
not right.
Hold on, man. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And it's not only the fact that he was on the show, but he was on the show so far away from the game's actual release, because it's a television appearance is something that, say, like historically for cinema or for music, it's when an album or a movie is coming out next week.
Or like at least like or like no more than like a month, really.
Yeah, exactly. But this was, you know, at least 6 months,
yeah.
if memory serves me correctly, before the game actually released.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen anything like it. And I feel like just hype really destroyed this game, or it's making people kind of not really see it for what it actually is, I believe. And I really do think that it's a very important game.
Yes.
And it will be remembered for maybe starting a trend of studios making games where you can take off from planets and land on other planets. And I think that it will be quite influential, because I think studios can see that the concept is so, so good.
Mm-hmm.
And that other studios might go, we can do it better.
Yeah.
Much again, like Grand Theft Auto 3, remember for like 4 or 5 years after it, it was just open world. Every game became open world, and even Tony Hawk's.
Yes. Tony Hawk got an open world story mode in there.
Yeah, like it's bizarre, but what do you think, what do you think was the main problem surrounding No Man's Sky before its release?
I think one of like the biggest things was the fact there was very little concrete information on it. And I know a lot of people have been criticizing Sean Murray about how he deflected a lot of questions about the game. I'm sure he wanted to talk about that stuff. There's a part of me that thinks that maybe like Sony's marketing didn't want him revealing too much. Yeah. And that is always one of the challenges of game development, and not just with No Man's Sky, but with just about any game, with knowing how much you want to reveal. And there's even, like, we can easily segue into talking about Kickstarter and the concept of overhyping and overpromising there. But again, yeah, that's another topic easily.
Yeah, oh, that I could talk about that for 3 days.
Yeah. Now, one question I want to ask you about, Nathan. You said that you're a fan of these kinds of open-ended style games.
Yeah.
For you, do you like the survival genre? Stuff like The Long Dark, Subnautica, or even, I'm sorry?
Like DayZ,
yeah, those kind
of survival games. I am, actually. I very much enjoyed Don't Starve.
Yeah.
Now, that's kind of like a proper independent game. And I remember playing the multiplayer of that, and I had great fun with it. That was kind of the last survival game, per se, I played. I was playing that maybe 3-4 months ago. Don't Starve Together, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And I really do like it because it gives you that tension.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of games, I think, in my opinion, have gotten much easier as time has gone on. You wouldn't really get the obscenely difficult games like Driver, where the tutorial is next to impossible.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, they're a lot more forgiving, so it's kind of nice to play a game where you realize, damn, I'm screwed if I don't sort myself out here. Kind of like Fallout New Vegas. I love the hardcore mode. It just added a different kind of dimension to the game.
Yeah.
But I think the problem with it isn't the fact that it's a survival game. It's just that if you're making such a game, again, I'm coming back to the lack of inventory. It's just a strange decision. Even 5 or 6 extra slots would be fantastic, Shaw.
Yeah.
You know, I need to build a hyperdrive. And
it's that kind of like busy work, I think, has been one of the things that has annoyed me or kept me away from a lot of survival style games.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just like the constant repetition of, I'm going to go do all this, but wait, I need to gather food. But now I'm going to be able to go here. Well, I need to gather more grass or whatever because I need to use that in this recipe.
I'm being attacked. Wait, I need to go to the toilet. Dead.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that it's just that repetition that is really just, it really sullies the genre for me. I've been, by the time this goes up, I've been getting into Subnautica, which is the survival game. Basically, it's all about being on an ocean planet, and you have to build your own habitat and survive and basically swim while avoiding sharks from eating you.
That looks fantastic.
Yeah, and I've been enjoying it for, I think, the wrong reason. I like it so much because your basic vitals, which is hunger and thirst, are basically fixed very easily. Like one of the fish you find in abundance around you can be used to solve that. So I'm not constantly having to worry about the basics. It's more about, okay, now I want to go see if I can dive, you know, 100 meters into the surface to get some rare resources that will let me build this. And it also has a pretty big inventory system, so I think that also helps. I did try We Happy Few. I think that's another game that's also sort of dealing with, I guess, the pressure of its own hype. Did you try out We Happy Few yet, Nathan?
I haven't, actually, no.
It was pitched in terms of a Kickstarter as this alternate 50s, 60s London take. Basically, sort of like Twilight Zone. Everyone is forced to be happy or else. They're like hooked on drugs called joy. And like,
it's a good premise.
Yeah, and the opening of the game, like, here's what's interesting about the early access is that the early access has their intro, which is like 5 minutes long, and then puts you into the, I guess, the quote-unquote sandbox mode of survival. Mm-hmm. When the game hits 1.0, they're going to release the whole story of the game. And that five-minute intro is amazing. And then when I got to the real game, or the quote-unquote real game, I was like, I don't want to play this. I won't go back to the story. And they're having kind of that trouble again with balancing what they originally promised with the story with what's currently available, which is this very basic, just more focus on survival than it is about dealing with this completely strange world.
Yeah, well, I think as well, another kind of oddity in the modern kind of games industry, and I think that is kind of fueling hype, mm-hmm. is season passes and day one DLC.
Yes. Day one DLC, especially for No Man's Sky, which had to have a day one patch, which also caused a lot of people to go nuts over.
Yeah. It's something that I think the companies are aware of, because mm-hmm. when I go on the PSN store or Steam, I'm seeing these ads of pre-order now for €100, $100. And you get the Super Deluxe Galaxy Universe Extreme Diamond Edition. And it comes with day one DLC. So I think that studios are under more pressure more than ever to kind of hype their games up, because games are costing more than ever. Mm-hmm. They're taking longer to develop more than ever. And there's just more money in it more than ever.
Yes, definitely.
And it's just that they need to kind of really promote the brands, and I don't like the concept of day one DLC. If it's ready in time for the release, it's ready in time to put it just in the game. Mm. And it's becoming more and more of a common practice. And now we're at a stage where independent games like No Man's Sky are costing 60 upon release, yet they need patches, there's DLC, and you're going to need a season pass.
Mm-hmm. And the $60 price tag for No Man's Sky is, I think, a really important point to talk about. Definitely. It's something that I've been thinking about over like the last 2 years, especially with getting more into the independent scene and talking to developers. Mm-hmm. And the quote-unquote race at the bottom has been a very serious concern among a lot of indies about just how much can they reasonably expect to make with their games. It doesn't matter if your game is, you know, Peggle 5 or a retread of Angry Birds, or if you're making a completely unique game like No Man's Sky, people are expecting prices to go down and down and down. And about, I think last year, I talked to a few developers about, do you think we will ever see an indie game be priced at $50, $60? Because that is full-on retail AAA territory.
Yeah, where's the line? Mm-hmm. Where's the line between an independent game and just a AAA retail game? Like, No Man's Sky is kind of in purgatory between the two.
Exactly. I think, go ahead, finish your thought.
Thank you, sir. It had the marketing mm-hmm. and hype of a AAA game, yet the studio behind that hype mm-hmm. was maybe 10, 12 people.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I honestly don't recall anything like it mm-hmm. in the industry. It's just become this unique kind of island all on its own.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was about to say, too, that, again, when we think of an independent studio, we think there's a different perception in terms of the quantity or the quality of the game we're going to get. I know when I buy a game like Don't Starve or Invisible Ink, or even one of my other favorite games, Renown Explorers, I know I'm willing to put aside like common complaints I would have about a $60 game. So I know this wasn't developed for $60. It was released at maybe $15, $20, maybe a little bit less than that. So I'm more willing to look about or ignore the fact that there's not, you know, 100 hours of gameplay, or it's not infinitely replayable. But I think, as you pointed out, Nathan, when you hit $60, there is a greater sense of perception. There's a greater sense of entitlement about spending that amount of money. And
it is an investment.
Yeah. If James was on, we would talk about how, for a lot of people, you're not buying $60 games every day. That can be your one game for 3 to 4 months. I mean, hell, back when I was younger, games were like $70, $80. And I was not buying an $80 game every week. And then you flash forward to the day where I can easily buy like 10 games for like $15 with a Humble Bundle, or the latest independent release could be $10.
Well, Josh, for me, I don't know about you, but when I shell over 60 for a game, it's normally for games like Fallout, The Witcher, or say like Metal Gear Solid 3, 4, I bought this day one, or Metal Gear Solid 5. It's these games, Skyrim again, these games that I know that I'm going to get my money's worth.
Yes.
That there's enough content here. Just in the base game alone, that I'm guaranteed at least 50 hours.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point right there about having that investment in the game. And you expect it because, again, you're putting out $60. For me, I've said this multiple times on the cast, despite loving video games and playing a lot of them, I really have become more price conscious over the last 3-4 years. Unless the only games that I will buy day one full price are the ones that I know, A, I'm going to love, and B, I know that a sale will be, you know, a snowball's chance in hell kind of thing. So Nintendo, Blizzard, even stuff like Firaxis. I mean, I bought XCOM and XCOM 2 basically day one. Those are like very rare. Or even something like Dark Souls. Like, I know I'm going to love a Souls game. The only one that was slightly disappointing was Dark Souls 2, but if we talk any more about that, that's 4 hours right there.
Oh, and we're gone. No, but that's a great point, because for me, I think there's 6 or 7 games in my life that I bought day one.
Yeah.
And it's totally irrespective of any hype surrounding it. It's like I'm blind to it, because I just know that this studio, I've loved all their previous games. Mm-hmm. It's a genre I love, and yes, I'm going to like it. It's almost like it's all but a guarantee.
Yeah. For me, we talked about Don't Starve a few minutes ago, but Clay Entertainment has become one of those studios. When they announced at E3 that they're working on sort of like a Dwarf Fortress space colony simulator game, I basically said to myself, I'm playing that day one. I don't.
you don't have money.
Release that game now, please. I want it. And that goes back again to this level of transparency and sort of how independent studios have really become like these faces and less of a corporation. Again, we talked about Sean Murray over the last few minutes, but when you become that face of a game or that face of your company, people tend to respond better. It's why a lot of people have decidedly become so untrustworthy of EA.
Exactly. Like, but
when you say EA, you're not thinking of lead designer on Medal of Honor or whatever. I mean, I don't even know that person. I just think EA.
Or a sweet, friendly dude who's sitting there going, do you have any questions? You know, yeah, do you want a drink? Do you want to talk about the game? What features would you like? We won't have any day one DLC, not us. But just to go back to your point, Josh, about they're more at the forefront and like spokespeople for the games, it's great to get that transparency, but on the flip side, it's also more of a risk.
Yes.
Because I've watched over a couple of Sean Murray interviews that he did a year or 2 years ago, and he shot himself in the foot with a lot of his promises. Yes. And again, I'm not pointing the finger at him. I'm really not, but I can see why the hype was built and why he kind of has pie in his face at the moment. Because first thing I can think of is the multiplayer. Mm. He specifically said, yes, there would be multiplayer. And also that when somebody followed through with the question, I think it was a GameSpot interview. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. But then the interviewer asked him, oh, so could you meet someone on a planet and be able to interact? And he said, yes, but there's so many planets that it's almost impossible. You know, that won't happen. Yet, I think 2 days after its release, two people found each other. And they were testing to see if they could see each other, and they were naming the plants, they were naming the flora, fauna, whatever, and yet they couldn't see each other. Mm-hmm. And you just got to think, why would you say that? You know, like, I personally love single-player games. I'm not really, a super multiplayer guy. It's always nice to have the option, particularly co-op. I'm more of a co-op than a competitive guy, but you got to think that he brought on a lot of this hype himself. Mm-hmm. And in a way, a lot of the venom is coming from stuff that he promised. And be it whether he couldn't implement it in the game, or if it was maybe a plan to add later in season passes or DLC or whatever, you have a lot more to risk when you're that transparent.
Yes.
And he really kind of left himself vulnerable to this kind of feedback. Mm-hmm. It's like the hype monster he built came back to eat him.
Yeah, and that's one, I think, the biggest lessons, especially about being a game designer, is you have to be careful when you give absolute answers. When you say, yes, this will be in, no, this won't be. Because, again, people will take that as the truth. That will be set in stone. Take
the gospel. Yeah. Because they're paying for it. And if they're paying money that they've worked for, or that they find on the grind off the bus, which happened to me once, great times. But if you're exchanging money on the pretense that you're getting this kind of content, you shell over the money, bring it home, and it's not there. Mm-hmm. I can see why people are a little pissed off or disappointed. I'd say it's more just disappointment.
Yeah.
But so will you play No Man's Sky?
I think eventually I will, either if I ever get a chance to upgrade my computer or if I get my hands on a PlayStation 4. I think I do want to at least try it out. Just to, see, again, sort of this new kind of design, this new kind of proprietary kind of procedurally generated engine.
Yeah.
And
I think it's a good time to play it. Sorry, please continue.
I was just going to say, regarding, sort of the hype around it, it's that same kind of issue. You have to know when to say no and when to give absolute answers. But the challenge of that, especially involving game development, is that you may not have those answers. A game can change radically, 6 months down the line, or even 1 month down the line, as we saw with the day one patch and how much of a difference there was between what the game was at 3 months ago and what was sort of considered the retail version.
And also remember, Josh, that they lost a lot of what they were working on when their studios was essentially destroyed. Who knows if that draft of the game was more akin to the E3 unveiling.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how much exactly they had to kind of rebuild and redesign, or maybe some things just couldn't work at a certain level. You need to figure this out as you develop, and maybe they had to cater to what people were starting to talk about, the expectations. Maybe they noticed that, okay, maybe we need to implement guns, because maybe the first question somebody would say is, can you shoot? And then it's like, okay, need to do this. Can you do this? And then it's always like an evolution. So to actually get to a stage where, this is the finished game, it's kind of like years of almost just slight tweaking, sometimes major tweaking, but a game never stays the same for 6 months when it's in development. It's a very kind of complex, ever-changing item that you're building. And I do wonder, was it a very different case 2 years ago with the game that they were trying to make, but then the pressure of expectation made them kind of go in a different direction? It would be curious to see, if Sony never gave them this kind of publicity, what the game would be like. and how it would be received.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be very interesting. If it just was released to not a whole lot of attention and it was $20 on release,
mm-hmm.
I think we'd be talking about something completely different.
Yeah.
If it was the same product.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And again, depending upon what you price your game at, that is going to have a massive difference on the amount of content people are expecting.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think I agree with you on that, Nathan, that if Sony didn't get involved, this was just going to be another indie release, maybe $20, $25. Who knows what we would have gotten in that version of No Man's Sky.
Exactly. And it's a thing that I unfortunately don't think it's going to be the last time, especially with the indie game market it's growing and it's becoming like this massive industry in itself almost, where
yeah.
it's getting a lot of publicity, and I don't think it's the last time that we'll see an indie game being hyped as something more than just an independent game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to become more common, where the prices are going to go up, but the content is going to go down, because ultimately it's still an independent game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a funny thing, man, what's happening in the industry. And well, like, what do you think? Can you think of another game, hype-wise, that kind of is similar to this? Or what was there a game in your life that was hyped up that just totally disappointed you?
I think those of you who've read a few older posts on Game Wisdom, I think you may know the answer to this one.
But
it is pretty much the works of Pierre Molyneux, I think, have been the games that have really disappointed me. I think, like many people, I bought Black and White day one, and I thought, yeah, this is okay, but, you know, this isn't the be-all, end-all amazing thing.
Yeah, it wasn't the complete God simulator. That,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I didn't learn my lesson, and I bought the movies, which also had a lot of promise and hype about, you know, you're going to be able to create your own scenes and have complete creative control, and you can post your movies and we'll rate them and we'll win, you win awards.
Awesome. Yeah.
And that, I think, was the last time I basically did the whole hype train kind of thing, because I actually subscribed to the forums. I was excited. I couldn't wait. Like, the whole year was like me in anticipation. And then I think I spent maybe a grand total of 40 minutes playing that game when it came out. And then around the time of Goddess, the whole kick, I mean, hell, that leads us right into Kickstarter territory, but Goddess to me is just one of like the worst. That is like one of the examples of Kickstarter gone wrong kind of thing. Like, the game just did not meet any level of expectation.
Yeah, that was very underwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very underwhelming. And I'm trying to think a game. I think Destiny was a game that I think had massive hype around it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that was for purely different reasons, you know, with Bungie being involved and that the fact that they're developing for Sony.
Mm-hmm.
And their marketing campaign, I think, was $80 million or $70 million. Just insane money for a video game. And it's crazy how it's changed in just 10 years. Hell, even 5 years, just the money that's surrounding the industry and the amount of attention games get, and it's fascinating, but it's also quite scary for somebody that, you know, played a NES.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are we going to be in 5 more years?
Yeah, and marketing is another major part of generating this hype, and as you said, Nathan, the amount of budget but marketing budgets have gone obscenely high for especially AAA developers.
Yeah, it's almost like, is this the NASA funds or are you making a video game?
Mm-hmm.
like posters on Times Square, television spots, interviews, just it's crazy. It really is crazy.
And it's like getting to the point where the marketing is more expensive than actually developing the game.
And the game itself is $10 worth, you know?
Yeah. And that is a major point about sort of a lot of the problems people are having with the AAA market. Like, when we hear that game needs like 5 million copies sold in order to be considered a success, I mean, that just is mind-boggling, especially when you look at like an independent game that like 100,000 copies is more than enough that they ever thought was possible.
I'd be happy if I sold 200 copies of anything that I made. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd be delighted. But I think it's quite similar to, say, like the movie industry, mm-hmm. where studios are pumping so much money into games now that it's almost stunted the creativity. So I respect the hell out of Sean Murray and his team for doing something different and being brave enough to go from Joe Danger to a galaxy. So I respect that, but I really think that they got a little screwed over by the promotion, and also they screwed themselves over a little bit with how they were talking about their own game.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wonder, like, any money that they received for Sony, was it for marketing, or did it actually go towards the game itself to help them make it?
Yeah.
Where did the money go?
Exactly. And
the money.
Another part, I think, going back to like the TV interviews and the conferences with Sean Murray, another part that makes it very tricky about being like the face of a game is also doing that level of PR. One of the things I've learned with talking to a lot of indie developers is that most of these people, they have no PR training. They are not they've never wanted to be the face of a company. They don't want to be the guy out there giving interviews. They want to make the game. That's what they want to do. And I know
that's their passion.
Exactly. But what we're seeing, and I think this may sort of be like a cause of this hype, is that especially in the independent market, you have to be that face. You have to do PR if you want your game to get out there. And there are developers and people who they're just not good at that stuff.
Exactly. I think that Sean Murray, the whole team, mm-hmm. it was kind of who drew the short straw.
Yeah.
Be the one to go on stage at E3 and talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that was terrifying.
Oh, yeah. And as we're saying, independent developers, like the independent market, has really been getting propped up over these last 5-6 years. Again, I remember back in the early 2000s where if it wasn't from a major studio, if you weren't spending $60 on a game, it was going to be crap. It was going to be like this budget title, you know, like Barbie's Horse Adventure, the game. And now we're seeing games like Minecraft.
That's a great game, man. You know, watch your tone. Watch your tone. You know, well, what if that happens to be my favorite game? You know, just But no, I totally see your point. Like the branding and the studio behind the game is still very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
But with indies, it's becoming more about it's more transparent. But also, it's what are you getting for your money?
Yes.
And it's such a, sorry for cutting you off, but it's such mm-hmm. a young market that they haven't really figured out the rules yet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It is like, we keep saying this, but it really is like the Wild West right now for really just like the game industry in general. We've definitely have standardized a lot over the last decade, but then with the rise of the independent market and digital distribution, it's still very much no man's land, no pun intended, for...
Well played.
Thank you for trying to establish these rules. And going back to Sony, and as we said a few minutes ago with Clay Entertainment, Clay is also soaring to get that level of notoriety. They were at the Sony press conference this past E3, and mm-hmm. Sony has been doing a lot to be welcoming and showing off independent developers, more so than Microsoft or Nintendo are doing at this time.
Yeah, Sony have really, I think they realized the potential in it.
Yeah.
And I think Sony really just need to go into a studio, walk in the door and say, yo,
mm-hmm.
we'll market your game and we'll get a cut and it's exclusive to PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
And you just know that if an indie developer has been slaving away on a game for years and mm-hmm. pouring his heart and soul into it and getting nowhere, if you get a call from Sony, jump at it, because it's not even just the money, but the distribution. You know that your game will get seen and played much more than it would have if it was just independently distributed.
Oh, yeah. And it also goes with Kickstarter as well. I mean, when they announced the Shenmue Kickstarter at one of the Sony press conferences.
That was strange.
What's going on? Yeah, it's... And as I think you are perfectly right there, Nathan, that if you're an independent developer and Sony decides to give you a call, not a lot of people would say, no, I don't want Sony to help me.
No, I'm fine, thanks.
It's definitely a smart move by Sony. I think it's what has been helping them. I think right now they are considered number one in terms of the console wars, or at least presently number one, because of like just the amount of games that are on PlayStation and PSN.
Great variety on the PlayStation, I think.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, I know about the indie game Fury, which I really enjoyed, and was released both for PC, I think exclusively to PlayStation, or PSN, PS4 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right about that, with if Sony can give independent developers not only a console front to establish themselves on, but provide that backing, it's basically a win-win for everyone. The developer gets more notoriety than they would have ever gotten, and Sony can basically say, oh, are you tired of the same first-person shooter or the same whatever? Look at all these unique games we have.
And also, it's I don't know if it's their sole purpose, but I think it's just to bulk out, sell like the PlayStation Plus, the Instant Game Collection.
Yeah.
A lot of those independent games, I've noticed, seem to go straight into that Instant Game Collection. So I think that they're being very clever. They're kind of... they're diversifying their selection. They've kind of got, oh, look at these totally digital games, these independent games, and we've got the big budget games, Uncharted, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been very clever in the marketing, I think, and with the direction that they're going, as in just a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they can kind of hype up that thing, like, we're a console for these games and for the independent games and VR, and the PlayStation can also make Toast. It can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see the next generation, how independent games are they going to keep rising, or is it just kind of, it's just the hot thing at the moment?
Yeah.
It's just a cool little thing that it's a couple of three or four really successful independent games made it, and now Sony have just totally jumped on that boat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for the next, you know, Flower Journey, you know, games like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which are great games. I very much enjoy them. But what do you think was or is the worst aspect of marketing in video games? Is there anything that you particularly dislike about the industry, in the sense of how games are marketed or promoted or whatever?
I guess, can we count sort of like paid reviews and sponsored content in that?
Yes, most certainly.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of like the more annoying factor. It goes back to my posts and my video on reviewing, and how it's really become just, again, about, it's not about a critical thought, it's more about just the hype machine.
Yeah.
Very few reviews actually go into detail. Is this game good? Is this game bad? We talked about this before the recording, but sort of like this idea of provisional reviews, and how we can just keep going back to review a game, or we reveal the review in like 30-minute pieces.
I detest it. And just on that point, I saw a video. I won't name them, of course,
mm-hmm.
but it was for the new Metal Gear Solid, which, oh, God.
That's an hour, I think, right there.
Oh, that's an hour of therapy, and then an hour of podcast. It was this channel. I really like them. You know, it's a good channel, and one of the people that are on it is an ardent Metal Gear Solid fan.
Mm-hmm.
Just adores the series. Now, I'm not going to say it's going to be terrible, but it looks like it's going to be terrible. And they were doing a video on it, and you could see the pain in his eyes, but they were just totally positive about it. And that's when it really hit me. It's like, man, they're being paid just to say good things about it.
Yeah, there's that ever popular image of Jeff Knightley standing, you know, like sitting there with like the soulless expression on his face behind. He has like Mountain Dew on one side of him and a halo cut out on the other side.
Just totally selling out. But yeah, no, the paid reviews, it's toxic, really. I don't know, it just destroys any kind of what word am I looking for? There's a word in my head that I'm looking for.
Credibility?
Credibility. That's, thank you for lifting up my skull and pulling the word out. It just destroys the credibility of reviews. And they are like a cornerstone of the industry. You know, with the rise of sites like Metacritic and stuff like that, people want a number and they decide how they spend their money. And if the reviews that are driving these sales are tainted, it's just cancerous to the industry, really, and for the consumer, because it's kind of like, well, look, does this person actually like this game, or does he just like the money? Are there any other aspects of like this kind of new hype kind of era in video games? Is there something you miss about the good old days?
I think the biggest thing that I really miss are like the article and think pieces in a lot of magazines and outlets like 1UP. I really enjoyed 1UP during
that time. I love 1UP. I was a massive fan of 1UP.
Yeah. And again, being able to get these pieces about, again, talking more about the concepts of these games, more about what goes into them, rather than just writing to a number or having to make sure that my review has to be a 8 or 9 because we have a sponsored deal with a developer.
Like a lot of the opinion pieces and proper features, just they're not really there anymore, because I think the market has kind of changed, where it's kind of quick, snappy, quick fire, silly face, loud noises.
Yes.
And it's all about that. That's what's popular at the moment. And you can see just the shift towards more content like that. And as I said, kind of at the start of the cast, all those days ago, that's, I'd like to kind of bring it back a bit, bring it back to basics, almost. But in the sense of like, what is this game? How does it make you feel, almost? Is it good? Just actually honest, open, and in-depth. And it would be a shame to see like kind of the legacy of 1UP and see it just disappear. That kind of article-based journalism. It's just pure journalism, really. Journalism is kind of a slowly dying medium in video games, because I think the industry is moving so quickly it almost doesn't have time for it.
Yeah, and it's again what we've been talking about with like how fast things have been evolving. Again, this idea of the independent market being this, you know, fast growing, unique games we would never see otherwise is only still maybe 6 to 8 years old at this point in time. And
it's
again,
school. It's still in school.
Yeah. And it's just fascinating how fast, I mean, digital distribution, for those of you listening to this cast right now, get your drinks ready, because we're bringing up Steam again. But
I'll drink to that.
But again, like, I grew up, you know, 2004, when I heard about Steam, it was like, this is horrible, I don't want this. Who would ever want to have all their games tied to one thing? This is never going to take off. And
you're a little wrong on that one.
Yeah, that was wrong. That was before I started doing this, so I'll channel out to
you. Imagine you at the stock exchange going, will I invest $100 in Steam?
Nah, it will never work.
Nah, what about this Google thing?
Yeah. And again, the evolution from Steam and digital distribution has just radically changed the industry. And, I mean, any one of those just topics we just mentioned, that's easily a podcast in of itself worth of discussing. And even by the time we get to that, there is probably going to be more development. And you just, it's very hard to just take a breath and really stop and take stock of what's going on.
Yeah, especially with VR.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, VR.
And again, it's something that I couldn't even fathom like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's going to be standard. And it's, what kind of games are you going to get with VR?
Yeah.
Like, what's going to be after VR?
Mm-hmm. I mean, what we've been talking about, what's going to be next for Hello Games? What's going to be next for the survival genre? Even for if they decide to license the engine to another developer, what are they going to do with that? Imagine someone making a roguelike using that kind of procedural generation engine as its architecture.
I can see it happening, though, in 5 to 10 years easily.
Mm-hmm.
Where we get something like No Man's Sky, but there's cities on the planets.
Yeah.
There's more character, more narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, just look at the leap from PS2 to PS3, that generation, and then, you know, Xbox to Xbox One, 360. Mm-hmm. Like, just every kind of generation of consoles. I'm a PC gamer as well, but I think it's a lot easier to go by the console cycles.
Yes.
And, like, the kind of games that are going around at the moment.
And going back to what you asked me a few minutes ago regarding games that killed you or the hype just completely took over and disappointed you, one other example that I think could actually be a good way to sort of start to wrap up the cast would be Spore. Spore was another game that they promised everything on that game.
They promised the moon and the sun and the stars and
10 more galaxies and universes on top of that.
Yeah.
And
did you play Spore?
I didn't play until like a few years later, but I remember just the nosedive of reviews when it came out. And
it's actually quite similar to No Man's Sky, really, on a bit of a smaller scale, but
yeah.
Yeah, what happened there?
I spoke with Chris Hecker about it, like, I think 2 years ago. He couldn't obviously go into too many specifics.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was overpromised. They were trying, again, to do something so unique and so new, but at the same time, they had to build that engine. So no matter what they were going to build, it was going to still be a very shaky foundation. Yeah. This goes back to what we were saying earlier, that it's usually the sequel that is where we see the quality. Like, imagine what will happen if we see a No Man's Sky 2 in 5 to 10 years. Like, the jump from 1 to 2 there. And even, like, going back to something like Spore. If it just did enough to get a sequel so they could build on that foundation, that could have been a phenomenal game. But
exactly, yeah.
But it just didn't meet. It was pulled in 10 different directions, whether it's by design, by PR, or a little bit of both. And I talking about developers promising the moon and the stars, I remember an interview, I think it was by Will Wright, saying, oh, we'll allow you to, if you will have an option that any creature you create, you could have a actual figurine made of it and we'll mail it to you. It's like, really? You're going to do that?
You can imagine this guy, this artist with all the clay, just going, I'm not doing this.
I'm out. That's it. No. Get me the hell out of here. I'm done.
I did not spend 18 years at art college for this.
Somewhere, like after Will Wright said that, somewhere one of their developers just like had a heart attack. Like he could sense the pain coming.
The PR department's just making the kind of the throat signal stop, Will. Yeah. Stop.
Cut the mic.
Don't write checks. Your body can't cash, man. Don't write checks. But to go back quickly to Spore and the sequel and all that, I actually just had a conversation with a cousin of mine. He's a big gamer as well. And we were discussing Mass Effect. He's only just playing Mass Effect 1 on PS3. He's played 2 and 3, but he was saying, man, the leap from 1 to 2.
Oh, yeah.
like, you can understand from 1 to 3, but just the sheer, like, the absolute jump up in quality from 1 to 2 was mind-blowing.
And Assassin's Creed 1 to 2 is another big example of that.
Exactly. You know, and I'm sure we could just list off games all day, Josh.
Yeah, we could do that easily.
Yeah, about the sequels, but I was just like, yeah, that there was only a couple of years in between,
mm-hmm.
and 2 is so refined,
mm-hmm.
so smooth, there's so many new features, the story is fantastic and, like, even more in-depth, and there's more mythology.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they just figured out truly what direction they want to take it in,
mm-hmm.
and they also had the foundation of the previous
exactly.
game. And that's very important, and I hope that Sean Murray gets a chance to build on the foundation, but
mm-hmm.
I would like it if he's just left to do it and just to create. That's if he even wants to come back to it, because maybe he's so burnt out from this, he's like, y'all, I'm gone.
Yeah.
I don't want to tackle this anymore. But I think that if he were to go back to the series and develop a sequel, I think that it would be more like what people were hoping the first game would be.
Yeah.
And I think my final thought on No Man's Sky is that it's a tremendous concept,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a fully fledged game that warrants $60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
yeah.
I think I agree with you on that, and it will be very interesting, even by the time this podcast is posted in early September, to see, like, what is going on at Hello Games, and what is going to be next for that studio. That is another, like, big issue. Again, that's 2 hours right there, in terms of talking about how do you build your studio? How do you go from making, like, a little game to make something amazing, and then what are you going to do next after that?
I'm going to make a prediction. It's mm-hmm. a bold prediction that by the time this podcast is uploaded and people are listening to me talk, Sean Murray will be in Alaska with his Huskies, and a guy, his right-hand guy from Hello Games, will be coming to him and say, Sean, we need you back for one last mission. And he'll be there with the grizzled beard.
Very, I knew that was coming.
And the bandana, and you go, a mission. I don't got it in me anymore. As he slowly drags on his cigarette and sips on his whiskey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we're going to see beardless Sean Murray for a very, very long time.
I don't think we're going to see Sean Murray for a long time.
Yes. We may get a news report. Sean Murray disappeared in mysterious circumstances off the Gulf Coast.
He's gone to the galaxy he's actually created.
Yes. He built his spaceship. He left the planet.
That's what they're really working on. The yes. game is just a cover story.
That's what they use the Sony money for. Build the actual spaceship. All of a sudden, we'll see, like, Hello Games, like, the roof will open up and the spaceship will just shoot off, and we'll never see any of them again.
It's like, Sean, did you see the reviews?
I don't think he's coming back.
And you see his beard fall down. It's like, wait, it was a fake beard this whole time?
I guess for my final thought, and this is a question that I actually want, it's definitely too big to answer here, but for those of you listening, I want to sort of get your thoughts on this. As we've been talking about, especially with games that are sort of proprietary and trying to be something different, we've said multiple times how important that foundation is. As Nathan pointed out, that jump between Mass Effect 1 to 2, or even what we said earlier, between the jump from, like, Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2 to 3 to where we're at with 5. These are major and important stepping stones for game design. It's a part of one of my posts that I've written, I think, very recently about the importance of that foundation, why we need game sequels. And one of the things I'm wondering about, especially with the independent market, as we've seen, there are so many developers trying to stake their claim. And I'm wondering if part of the risk that we're seeing is developers trying to do everything at once. They're going to make the unique engine on top of the unique game design that no one's ever seen before and try to fit all of that into basically one game's worth of development. I spoke with Abbey Games about this, renowned explorers. It was one of my favorite games, but they said it was a nightmare to work on because they were basically building everything at one time. Mm-hmm. And a part of me is worried that is this going to become a trend in the next 6 months to maybe, you know, a year or two down the line, that independent developers are going to be pushed to basically double or triple their development and try to make that unique, perfect game with the never-before-seen engine and do it all with one game, as opposed to working on it down, like, two or three games down the line.
Yeah, and also, it's like, are independent studios going to be expected to make games that are more comparable with AAA titles?
Yeah. And that is definitely another discussion way too big to get into now. But yeah, that is definitely a worry and goes back to that race to the bottom. But I know we are about approaching, I think, an hour and 15 in terms of this actual recording. So yeah, we can easily, who knows how long we could keep talking about this.
Yeah, yeah. I could probably go for at least another hour and a half.
Yeah, me too. That's it's not...
I think for the sake of the viewers.
Yeah. We can, even though we've gone on several tangents, we could easily go, it's very easy for people like us to just keep talking and talking and.
We get lost in a forest.
Yeah.
Forest of tangents.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a fascinating conversation with you, Nathan. I would definitely love to have you back on, you know, whenever you have free time. Again, we can easily kill an hour or two like it's nothing, I think.
Most man. And thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed being on this podcast and discussing this topic with you. Whatever the topic was, it kind of split into it.
Beards and flying off into space.
Yes, and Sean Murray's fake beard. And but yes, I hope everyone enjoyed listening to me and Josh talking about hype, games, and an Alaskan buying Sean Murray.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, as we said at the start, if you enjoy the post here on Game Wisdom, be sure to check out Kotaki Gaming. There will, of course, be a link to that in the notes below. And yeah, like I said, definitely don't be a stranger, Nathan. I know this podcast, in terms of for those of you listening to it, probably won't go up for at least a few weeks from when we actually record it. But yeah, I would love to be able to do more frequent podcasts or do like double casts throughout the week, that kind of thing. And yeah, if you're ever free, I think we can easily turn any afternoon into a podcast conversation.
I'll walk that tightrope with you, man. I we'll hopefully be back.
Definitely.
And I'll gladly do it whenever we're free.
Cool. All right. So with all that said, again, we hope you enjoyed this conversation on hype, tangents, beard, space, and everything else we've mentioned. We could easily spend, I don't know, maybe 2-3 more hours, but I have work to get done. At some point, I guess I should eat dinner and maybe record a video. So we are going to wrap things up here. If you enjoy the podcast, as always, there are several ways to contribute to Game Wisdom. If you would like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. For the podcast, as I always say, if you're a student, developer, enthusiast, if you're interested in talking about video games, we can easily kill an hour or two like it's nothing. If you would like to support the Game Wisdom Patreon campaign to get the much-needed monthly funding we need to keep going, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom. Donations would be greatly appreciated. If we can hit that first goal, it would mean a lot to me in terms of keeping this site going. And we have a variety of rewards up there now to give you guys a lot more interaction with the site and get more great stuff in return. Also, be sure to follow me on Twitch and Twitter under GW Bicer for the latest updates. And as we said, be sure to check out the video content on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. There are a wide range of videos up there now, from Let's Plays, critical pieces, game examinations, and more. So, with all that said, Nathan, again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you today, and hopefully we can do it again real soon.
Right back at you, Josh.
Awesome. And for you folks listening, thanks again for tuning in, and I will see you all next time. Take care.